Check my inbox and what do I see? Just another day, another T-R-A-D-E. I'm an addict, and I need it in my veins. I'm an addict, otherwise I feel plain now. Every day I wake up, people got a problem. Making all these trades up, got me singing got them. But I've been paid up, I even started from the bottom. See, I don't wait up, I ain't even playing possum. So what it cost, I'm just a couple of firsts. Can't believe that it worked, not to say I'm a jerk. But I'm an addict, it's what I said in the first. You can curse all you want, you can pray in your church. I'ma keep tapping return. I win up, I learn. I ain't trying to burn any bridges. I yearn for the feeling I earn. All my winners to turn. You had a cheek before I drop you like the beat. I'm an addict, and I'm not really ashamed. I'm an addict. I'm reclining with the brain. I'm an addict, and the pot is what I'm playing. I'm an addict.
Russ and Rocky.
Other names. Trade Addicts Pod. Let's go.
I am Frank in the chat, and I have a trading problem.
I am Zach, and I also have a trading problem.
What's up, everybody? Welcome to Session 374 of the Trade Addicts Podcast, where even though the network went away, the dap is always here to stay. So drop a dap in the chat or in the comments if you're with us. We appreciate all of you. And today, we have one of my new good friends in the fantasy space. We have Zach, a.k.a. FF Chalupa Batman. How are you tonight, Zach? How's it going?
I'm doing great. Excited to be here. We are drafting together right now as we speak. So
yes,
it's fun.
Yeah, absolutely. And as you can hear, no Rocky tonight. So it's just going to be the two of us. And like Zach said, we're drafting in the same SFB draft. So maybe we'll talk about some of that as we go and try not to give some of our competitors any strategies we're going with right now, even though Zach's the one who keeps sniping me on everything. But we'll get to that. But before we get into that, we have a little interview that we do with first time guests. So, we'll get into that. So first off, how long have you been playing fantasy?
So this will be my 19th year.
Nice. And what was the starting? Was it college, high school, friends, anything along those lines?
High school. So it was, I'll call it weird. But I just moved to a new neighborhood and there were a bunch of dads in that neighborhood that already had a league together. And I was like the oldest kid, if you want to call me a kid at 16 years old, in the neighborhood. So they invited me and my dad to join the league. So that was my first experience of it. It was cool. We did a live draft. So that was fun that my first time playing was with a live draft because now not as many people get to do that anymore. So it was interesting, though. It was, again, just a bunch of dads and me. So I think I got fourth my first year, second my second year, and then I ended up winning the whole thing my third year. So
nice.
I was definitely hooked. And haven't stopped playing since.
Very nice. And then how long have you been playing Dynasty for?
So that's only been about 5 years. I started in 2020.
Nice. Okay. And then in that time span, what are some of the best trades you've made?
Sure. So I had to go back and look because there's one I remembered. And it is my first Dynasty League. I definitely built a ready to win now team and I got very unlucky. My first season, I lost my first game and then went undefeated all the way to the championship and then choked in the championship. Actually, might have been the semifinals. Either way, it was terrible. And Brady was my best quarterback. I had him and Herbert. And Brady was about to retire. He ended up staying another season. So I was desperate that following, like 2 years later, to get a quarterback because I had nothing left after Herbert once Brady left. So somehow I was able to get Lamar Jackson. I also got Hollywood Brown, not that important for the trade. And I gave up Aaron Jones, Desmond Ridder. This was Desmond Ridder, like rookie year. And then I gave up a 2023 second. So this was in 2023, right before our rookie draft, which ended up being Kincaid at the 110. I gave up a 2024 first, which ended up being the 106, and it was Adunze. Mm-hmm. And a 2024 second, which ended up being Penix, and then a 2025 second, which was just taken as Mason Taylor. So
nice.
I don't think I gave up too much to get Lamar Jackson. And then I finally won that league this past season. So
just all that matters, man.
Yep.
Yeah, I was going to say flags fly forever. And then what's some of the worst trades you've made?
I can't think of one that was like the worst trade. Nothing came to mind.
That's a good thing.
It's normally – the trades that you wish you could have made and they just didn't happen, and then the player ends up going off, you're like, oh, I wish I just would have found a way to make that deal, or vice versa, where there's some that ends up being your best trade because you didn't actually make the trade and you're like, oh, yeah, dodged a bullet. That guy got injured the next week.
Yeah. Yeah. That's, it's always hard, right? Because it's funny, you remember some of the worst trades, and I guess you not having any is probably a good thing, but you also do remember, like, oh, I could have had this player at this time, mm-hmm, and I was this close to, if I had just not thought about like that 20-25 second that I should have given away, it could have been something, yeah, amazing. So
I overvalued this player. I didn't want to include him, and he ended up not being worth it.
Yeah, I get that. And then what's a guiding principle you have in trading?
Sure. So for me, it's, you want to put a trade together where it helps both teams. Good luck making trades when you're just throwing them out there and it's like very, yeah, one-sided. Eventually, especially if you do it a lot, your league is going to get tired of that and just ignore you. Yep. So it's all about keeping up those positive relations, if you will. And then don't worry about winning a trade. I know people like to post on social media of like, oh, who won the trade? And that's just, it's fun. That's fine. Yeah. But don't worry about winning it. To me, if your team, if you think the trade is going to make your team better, then make the trade. If you don't, yeah, think the team is going to make your team better, don't make the trade. Yeah. It's okay if the other side also wins. Ideally, the trade should help both teams. Otherwise, why would they make the trade too?
Yeah, no, I agree. And it's something I've said before, that like, it's, people try and like get a big steal. Like they try and get, you know, Lamar Jackson for a couple of seconds or something like that. Like no one's going to do those. And if you need Lamar Jackson on your team, like you said, then, and it's going to help you get a title like it did for you that one time, like, yeah, you got to make the trade. So I think that's a really good point. So, all right, let's get into the news and notes. There's only one real thing, and man, I'm really reaching at this point, but we barely had news last week, so I gotta stretch. So Quarterbacks came out on Netflix, and in the first episode, Kirk Cousins basically said he might not have come to the Falcons if he had known they were taking Penix. And the funniest thing about that to me is he's still on the Falcons. This is not like some, he's on the Browns and he's saying this stuff now. So Zach, as you think about kind of Kirk Cousins and what's next, do you think he is a Falcon? Let's say week one, and then we can maybe stretch it out.
I would say, unless there is a significant QB injury in the preseason, which is always possible, then I would expect him to be a Falcon in week one.
Yeah. Yeah. I was trying to go through and think about like who has nothing behind them. And it's interesting. Like the Vikings are actually someone like that, right? They have JJ, but no Darnold anymore. They have like, I'm trying to think, like the Niners have Purdy, but they have Mac behind it. Who's like, you know, the meme is Kyle Shanahan finally got his quarterback from like 3 years ago. So I agree with you. I think he will probably be a Falcon pending injury. And I think if there is any sort of injuries along the way, like let's say, and I don't want to wish this on him because he's like one of my favorite buys right now. Let's say Dak gets hurt again. The Cowboys could absolutely make that move. So I agree with you. I think he's a Falcon for now. And if we see anything going on in camp, we could see Cousins moved. So honestly, that's all the news, but let's get into SFB. It's SFB week. First off, how do you think your draft has been going? We're both in Savannah Bananas. I've liked your draft thus far, especially because you've taken some of the players that I liked. So have you looked at your draft thus far? And do you have any kind of strategies for first-time SFB drafters who are either in the middle of their slow drafts right now or live drafting in a couple of weeks, over the next couple of weeks?
Sure. So I'll speak to my team first and I'll give some advice. So with the scoring and the league settings of basically being ultra flex, this was the first time I can remember in Scott Fishbowl that I don't have to worry about a quarterback, because it's always super flex and you're always like, okay, what am I pulling the trigger on quarterback? Am I getting one early, one of the elites? Am I going to try to hope get lucky in the second or third round? When do I take one? So there's no stress in that. So it's just a matter of deciding who did I want to target in the fourth pick. And I, about 2 weeks ago, decided I wanted Christian McCaffrey. I know that goes against ADP. I don't care. And I know there's plenty of risk with him. I don't care. For me, it's Scott Fishbowl. There's 5,004 teams in this league. So if, not that I plan on winning, but if I even want to give myself a chance at winning, You got to be different. You got to swing for the fences. And I don't know how you can swing any harder than with Christian McCaffrey if he stays healthy, with the 49ers having a quote-unquote soft schedule this year. So that's why I went that. And then honestly, with the scoring, I was really targeting running backs as much as I can early on. So after McCaffrey, I got Josh Jacobs, though I did want Puka just because of his volume, but he got picked a few before me. So I went with Jacobs and then Breece Hall. And then there was kind of a void in running backs that I liked with volume. So then I went with Ladd McConkey, who also should get plenty of volume, and Davante Adams, who may not get a ton of volume, but I think he could really put up a lot of touchdowns this year with Stafford on the Rams.
Yep.
So that's where I trended there. But really, my strategy in this is just where can I find volume at any position. And then really, I didn't care about quarterbacks or tight ends. I did take one quarterback in the eighth round. I'm the second to last person to take a quarterback. Mm-hmm. And I took a tight end right before that. So for me, it was just, like I said, target volume and then see where there was any kind of gaps in value and go from there. Now, as we go forward, I won't give too much away with you in my league and other people like Vince watching, but again, I'm still playing the volume game. So wherever I think I could find some sort of edge in volume and not really stress the maybe the exciting players that maybe get a lot of big plays, but maybe get one chance a game. Those players, I'll let everyone else kind of go after and avoid that. When it comes to advice for Scott Fishbowl, the first thing I would say is know your league, which I would use that advice for any league, but especially Scott Fishbowl, know what the scoring means for each player in position, know how the settings have set up. So if you've already started, you could be in live drafts. We have two more weekends of live drafts, or you could be in the middle of your draft right now. Go back and pay attention to the settings, understand how that works. And then go after your guys. Don't worry about ADP. Don't worry about all your different group chats of talking about this player and that player. Like, that's all fun. That's a great, you should be in those to get to know people, build that community. That's why you should be in it. Don't be in it because, like, oh, well, this person said I should get this, so I really should go after that. I don't even really like that player. No, go after the guys you like. Odds are you're going to suck in Scott Fishbowl. And I mean that nicely, as in you might be lucky to make the playoffs and then good luck there. But it's all about having fun, building a community. Yeah. It's also about raising money for charity. So just have fun with it. Root for the players you want to root for. When it comes to the playoffs, half of the league makes the playoffs, which is very exciting. But then every week, 500 teams are cut until we get to week 16. Then 450 teams get cut, and we have 50 in the final week 17. So the odds of you making it that far are very slim, much like if you play best ball, like underdog or something like that. But it's, again, more about having fun with your division, having fun drafting players you like. So don't stress ADP. Don't stress all that. Just, like I said, have fun with it. Make some new friends.
Yeah. A few things I want to hammer home before I get to my team. Zach and I are going to joke that we sniped each other's picks and stuff like that. Like, if you guys are please don't actually be mad at the rules and, like, the team. Like Zach said, it's like infinitesimal that you're going to win. Like, just, I think I've seen, like, Scott rail against the people who are screaming at him over third round reversal. Just, guys, it's a charity tournament for fun. Like, let's all calm down. And I agree on the, like, join the division you want. I was actually in a different division, and then I saw Zach, who's an Avi, I'm not going to say that right. I know I'm supposed to, but post his bananas logo, and I'm like, that, I want that. So I switched over, and I think we have a really awesome group. Everyone's been giving each other props. We've actually been moving, I think, pretty fast for a Scott Fishbowl slow draft. We're almost through round eight right now. So I guess getting to my team real fast, I took Chase at the start. I was going back and forth on it, especially during the podathon, which both Zach and I listened to or took a part of. And I'm sorry, Zach, I didn't wake up at 5 a.m. for your segment, but I did watch the replay of your, like, Brady Bunch thing y'all had going on with, like, nine of you in the stream, which was fun. So I was kind of going back and forth. I did take Chase.
Who are you considering that you were tilting on?
I was tilting on Gibbs and Barkley because the running back, like, being higher valued, and I do like Gibbs a lot this year. I'm not totally scared of Montgomery coming back, but I actually did think about Achan because I don't know if I posted this in the main chat, but like Keith Cummings, like an hour before the draft started, said like, this is my projections. And Heath is someone I've listened to for a long time, even when I was still playing redraft. And like Achan was like second. And I'm like, crap, really? Like, is he really?
I mean, if he gets all those dump offs, then
yeah.
I mean, at 2.5 a catch, it adds up.
So I really did sit there. I'm like, I can't take Devon Achan at 2. And so I said this in my segment on the pod, on the podathon. I think the Bengals offense is going to stink. We've talked about it on this podcast a lot. Or offense is going to be great. Defense is going to stink. So there's going to be a ton of volume for Chase. He's still the wide receiver one. I could see him absolutely repeating that and even doing better than last year because they're going to have to throw a lot. So after that, I went to Nico, who I wanted Amon-Ra, got taken right before me. But I do believe in what I said on Twitter, is that the Texans are coming back stronger than ever. I really genuinely believe that. Turned around, got a Marion Hampton, and then Pacheco later, who's another guy I've really been propping up over the last few months. I think the Chiefs offense is going to come back, and you want running backs on good offenses. The craziest pick I made was I took Justin Fields in the fourth, and I'm sure this was me tilting because Kittle and Ken Walker got taken like literally right in front of me. And Ken Walker's been my guy all offseason. I was just circling him. He was in my queue. And then he got taken right in front of me because I didn't think Ken Walker was going to go that early. So I took Fields. Am I comfortable with it? No, but I think the point of this is you're not supposed to be comfortable. So,
I mean, I like the Fields pick.
Yeah.
I was definitely keeping an eye on him. I was hoping he'd slip to like the fifth, just the way the board is falling. But he was definitely a QB I was targeting because for me, it was just talking about the quarterbacks. Those first four that everyone's drafting.
Yep.
If one of them slipped to me in the second, I would have thought about it. But they didn't even come close. And then after that, it was looking at Fields, and then otherwise I was going to punt. And so once you took Fields, I was like, all right, I don't have to look at quarterback for a while. And I stopped looking at quarterback. But I thought Fields is I would say a product of this scoring in the sense that he can rush for 1,000 yards. And that's a big deal for your QB in the scoring. So,
absolutely.
Whereas Lamar Jackson went in the middle of the first round.
I'm looking right now. He went seventh. He went seventh. Yep.
So, Allen went you're getting fifth. Him. Yeah, Daniels he went right after went me.
Ninth, yep. And then Hurts went at the 204. So, Vince, who we've
doubled
been
up.
Referencing, doubled up on Daniels and Hurts. So, that's a fun start. So,
which could be very dynamic with our settings, or maybe not, we'll find out. But I think Fields was a good value in the fourth round compared to those QBs going in the first and early second.
Right. And then the last couple guys I've taken, just following the get your guys, I took Stroud to stack with Nico, and then I took Waddle and Godwin, who could absolutely both be, you know, wide receiver twos into wide receiver one upside plays. So not to give too much away, but I probably need one more quarterback just in case Fields isn't exactly what he should be. But I think I can be patient. But I think this is such a fun format where there was no like need for a quarterback or need for a tight end, which no one's happier than me that a tight end isn't needed. But I think it's a fun way of kind of laying it out. So props to Scott for everything they've done. I'll let Zach pimp his live draft at the end because we're going to do some fantasy cares run through stuff. So all right, so let's get into the rest of the show. So usually we let the guest pick. Would you like to do trades or listener questions first?
Let's knock out the trades real quick.
All right, cool. So TradeX leagues are 12-team Superflex PPR tight end premium with 1.75 per tight end reception and 0.05 per return yard in all leagues except TA1 because they'll never break. They always hold. And we actually have a TA1 trade, and it's actually an interesting one. It's Ray Davis for a 2027 second. So, Zach, what do you think?
So I think it's a fair trade to start. I don't think there's a quote-unquote loser or someone's giving up too much value. I think it is very even. I personally would go with Ray Davis in the sense of it would not shock me, and actually I would be shocked if James Cook is with the Bills next season for 2026. Okay. I think he'll play just fine in 2025, but then I think he will go get paid somewhere else after the season. So Ray Davis could be the starter for the Bills. We don't know yet. But then at the same time, for your 2027 second, we're still a couple years away from that. I guess you can try to guess what you think that roster is going to do, and is it going to be a high pick or an early pick? But for me, I'd rather just go with Ray Davis, hope that there's a chance that James Cook isn't there. And then worst case scenario, if there's even any kind of, I guess, speculation of whether he will or won't be, use that to your advantage and trade Ray Davis later for maybe even better value than a 2027 second.
Yeah, I like that. Before I give my side, what are your thoughts on kind of trading future picks for younger assets like Ray Davis? Like, are you okay giving up picks down the line? Do you like holding them? And like, it obviously it's team dependent, but just in general, are you okay giving up future picks with thoughts you could get them back? Or do you try and hold on to picks as much as possible?
So in general, I'm notorious for not having draft picks. I definitely trade away my draft picks.
Sad Rocky's not here.
Yeah, one of my leagues, I don't have any draft picks. I traded them all away. For me, I'd rather get the known asset now, especially if I think my team's a contender. Those picks are going to be later in the round anyway. So how much are they going to help me? And now, every once in a while, you might give up somebody you wish you ended up having that draft pick. But for me, I'd rather have a known asset with value. Worst case scenario, I can then flip that asset as well. But yeah, I'm definitely notorious in my leagues to be known as the guy who never has draft picks.
Yeah. I agree with that. I think you can always get picks back, and especially in your kind of layout of this trade. I also like the Ray Davis side. I agree with you that if Cook is gone, I agree with you that Cook will play this year. I think he's going to do that whole holdout thing where he's probably going to show up like a week before the season starts. But, I think that could actually help the value for Davis up front, because they're going to have to wind Cook up because he's, you know, those guys who hold out, I always get a little nervous about. Like you saw it with Lamb, you've seen it with other people who've held out in the past, getting a little dinged up at the start because football shape is just a different shape, ladies and gentlemen. It's just not the same. So I agree with the Ray Davis side here. You can always get the second back. So moving on to TA4, we have George Pickens for Jaden Reed. I actually like this trade just based on the names, but and I think kind of the values where they are, but what do you think of this trade?
Again, this does feel like an even trade. I don't see a lopsided offer here. I prefer George Pickens. I'll try to be as unbiased as I can. I am a Cowboys fan, but I put fantasy football first and then Cowboys
there we go.
Second. So no worries there. But for me, I think Pickens is a better player than Reed. I'm concerned with the way that offense, that wide receiver group has been put together with the Packers of will Reed ever get enough snaps, get enough targets, get enough touches, be just used enough to ever be what we hope he can be. Like he's flashed plenty of talent, don't get me wrong, but
yeah.
I mean, they just added Matthew Golden into that. So we're just keep adding more and more wide receivers for Jordan Love. So I'm concerned that Reed's value is only going to continue to decrease as that shine kind of wears off. Whereas George Pickens now is with the Cowboys offense, which as much as people want to rag on the Cowboys offensively, they've been a juggernaut for fantasy football. Now they don't help a ton of people because you basically got CeeDee Lamb and Dak when he's healthy. Yep. Their running game actually hasn't been bad when they have a running back, but I mean, now you add in George Pickens who can take, I don't think he's going to take much of a target share from CeeDee Lamb, so I'm not worried about CeeDee Lamb in any way, but I think Pickens can still get plenty of targets, get some deep shots. I think that offense will definitely be dynamic enough to support Pickens way more than he was going to be supported on the Steelers. I don't care who his quarterback was. That was going to be rough. So I'd rather take Pickens. If you even don't like Pickens that much, I'd rather let him have a few good weeks with the Cowboys, and then you can flip him again for somebody else when people are like, oh, well, Pickens is really being used in the offense. He had two touchdowns in a row, and flip him then. But yeah, I just see their value going in different directions right now.
Yeah, it really depends on if you want like the guaranteed number two target on the Cowboys versus the wide receiver question mark on the Packers, right? Because Kraft is there and Golden is there, and I know Watson's hurt and Dubs could be traded and all these other things, but you have no idea what Reed's going to be. So I guess real quick, do you like Love in Dynasty now that they've kind of added more pieces?
No, I've never been a Jordan Love fan.
I knew I liked you, Zach.
Yeah, nothing against him. I just, he doesn't really run, so he's a pocket passer. Mm-hmm. So you need him to throw a lot of touchdowns. Well, the offense likes to run it as much as they can and establish a run, which is great with Josh Jacobs. And from a dynasty standpoint, Love hasn't gotten a ton of experience yet, but he's on the older side for his experience because he had to sit behind Rodgers for a few years. So he is definitely not one of the QBs that I ever target when I'm in a startup or if I'm in a league looking to trade. I don't want Love.
Yeah. I would never wish injury on any player ever because I don't need that level of karma, but that would be a very interesting place for Cousins if Love somehow got hurt for a long period of time and the Packers needed something because Cousins is built for that kind of West Coast offense. And I think LaFleur was one of those like 170 coordinators that Washington had those many years ago with like McVay and Shanahan and all those other guys on it. So I think I haven't been a big Jordan Love guy. I just never have been. I think they're throwing wide receivers at the problem, like you said, and we'll see how it turns out. And I'm happy to be wrong, but there have been times where I've traded like Jordan Love for Dak Prescott and Rashee Rice, and I'll take that all day long. So
And I don't think Jordan Love's a bad NFL quarterback.
No,
like he's very competent. It's just from a fantasy standpoint, he just doesn't give me enough upside to want to target him.
Yep. Okay, and then the last one, we have the Giants duo of Jackson Dart and Cam Scadabo for Matthew Golden and a 26 second. Back on the Packers.
So this one was easy for me, that I went Matthew Golden in the 26 second. I just don't want that Giants offense unless it's neighbors. Jackson Dart, he could be the starter all year. He could be great. He could suck. They could literally draft another QB next year. Cam Scadabo, again, maybe he's fun for this season, and then they get another running back next year. I just don't see any longevity on that side of the trade, whereas Golden, I think, has the draft pedigree to stick around for at least a couple seasons, and they're not going to replace him right away, again, assuming there's no injury. And then a 26-second, to me, has more value than, like, Scadabo, just straight up. So, again, I can use that as a trade asset. For another trade or hold on to that pick depending on where it falls, because if that person's getting the Giants players, their team might not be too good.
Yeah. And it's interesting, right? If these were like picks, this is like the 109 for the 2-3 and the 2-7, which like happens all the time in like normal rookie drafts. So yeah, I'll take Golden in the pick as well. I'm not totally in on the Giants. I think Dart's going to play probably more than he should. And Scadabo's probably the goal line guy, but that's not really an offense that's going to be like at the 2-yard line a lot. So I'm with you. I think give me the Packers wide receiver, even though I think they're all the same. And I don't really like the Packers wide receivers. But
at least he's the youngest one. He's the newest
one. Right, exactly. All right. Let's get into the listener questions. We'll get through Dynastud's question list this week. And by the way, for the listeners, Dynastud will be on, I think, August 12th. So we're going to figure out a question list for that week. So everyone get your questions ready because he's going to be on the show. So what are the top lessons that you learned from SFB15 that you're taking with you into Dynasty? Could be theory or individual player or positional takes. What do you think?
Sure. So I kind of already mentioned this earlier at the top, but you must know your league settings. So I don't care what dynasty league you're playing in. I don't care what the scoring is. you can have the wackiest scoring, the most basic scoring, the craziest roster lineup setups, whatever it is, but you need to know what they are and find those edges of where you can take advantage of value. Because I promise you, as much as a lot of people in the industry tell you to know your league, plenty of people you'll play with don't know the league as well. Yep. And so you can find those small edges. And over time, if you stack up enough of those little small edges, you're going to put your team in position to win a championship. And that's really all it takes in fantasy, is just to get enough of a small edge to tip the scales in your favor. So know your league. Doesn't matter what the setting is.
Yeah, for me, it's kind of what we talked about already. It's just get your guy. And, you know, there's such things as like a ridiculous reach in rookie drafts. But if you like Golden at the 105, take him at the 105. And mm-hmm. or try and trade down. But, like, get your guy. This is supposed to be fun. This is supposed to be a game. None of this is like I there's big money leagues out there. If you play in one, you maybe don't listen to this part. But, like, a lot of this is supposed to be fun. And this mm-hmm. is supposed to be a game, and you should I genuinely try and like pick players I want to root for. Mm-hmm. And I think that makes this just more fun. And it's like I'm a Bears fan, so there's obviously some bias there, like taking Odunze over Brian Thomas last year, which is gonna look really bad now. But
it might not.
It might not. It's too early. Yeah. Odunze could be the wide receiver one this year. I've actually been buying into that. But just get your guy and have fun with this. And it's one of those things that, like I said, it's a game. And you should be enjoying it. So that's my number one advice. And actually, it's funny. I've actually, now looking at my team, I think I've taken Dynasty into SFB 15 because I have like very little like old redraft assets right now. So
that happens a lot.
It does, especially as you play more and more Dynasty leagues. I have like one redraft league left and I take all these young guys and I'm like, crap, why did I do that? So it's hard to turn the Dynasty brain off once you really have it turned on. So I think I've actually taken Dynasty into SFB, which is a funny way of thinking about it. Okay. How do you think the Arizona offense changes this year? Specifically, should I be worried about McBride's volume with talk of a year or two, Marvin Harrison jump, Kyler running more, et cetera? Or should I be buying and hoping that the touchdowns come around this year? Before we get into that, Marvin Harrison Jr. looks jacked. If you haven't seen those pictures, he looks like he's gained 50 pounds and he looks huge. What do you think of the question?
Yeah, no, I think he put on like 9 or 10 pounds of muscle, crazy. Which is
looks good so much more than that.
Yeah. But for me, I know there's been a lot of talk this offseason of like, Marvin Harrison Jones was a bust because we had all these high lofty goals for him. He didn't have a bad rookie year. Now, compared to Neighbors or BTJ or Ladd, like it feels like he had a bad year, but I think we've just been spoiled the last few years with rookie wide receivers just hitting the ground running. But I mean, most rookies wouldn't complain about that year. I think it was more the fact that he had 116 targets, but I think he had 62-ish in the mid 60s of reception. Yeah. So if he just gets his catch rate up a little bit, that makes a huge difference. For me, I am not worried at all about that offense from a standpoint of affecting McBride. So like I said, he had 116 targets, MHJ, which is a 21% target share. That's a very healthy target share, especially for a rookie. I could see it bumping up a little bit more. But McBride had, I think it was like 146, 147 targets, somewhere in there. I don't see him getting much more than that. He had 111 catches. It was his touchdowns that really hurt him from a fantasy standpoint. Honestly, I don't see the workload for McBride changing much. Maybe even it ticks down a little bit. But assuming he gets that regression in touchdowns, which he should statistically, from a value standpoint, I don't see him being worse than last year. If anything, he'll be better because he'll get more touchdowns. And I think Marvin Harrison Jr., I would expect him to hopefully do better at catching the ball. I think they'll try to find ways to scheme him a little bit better with easier targets because there's so much going downfield, hence the low catch rate. And so I like both players. I like that offense. I have no fear of McBride dipping. So I would still be targeting McBride as much as I can. And if you can get any value on MHJ because someone's freaking out about his rookie season, then take that all day too.
Yeah, absolutely. We're a big Kyler podcast. We always have been because a lot of the time there is, and I said this in the chat of someone's show the other day, there's association with NFL success and fantasy success in this industry for some reason. This happens with Dak a lot. This happens with Kyler a lot. That because they stink in the NFL in certain times, they're not good fantasy players. Kyler's been a top 12 quarterback, I think, every year he's played. I think fully healthy. I think he got injured one year. But I agree with the Marvin Harrison buy-in, if you can buy into it. I agree with the McBride buy-in, because even if the targets come down because Marvin Harrison goes up, it was like a meme last year how few touchdowns McBride had. He almost has to have more than like the two he had last year.
He had one at the end of the season, and then he recovered a fumble in the end zone. So I think they count as a rushing touchdown.
Yeah,
so
right.
Two touchdowns, one reception, one receiving touchdown. I mean, the amount of targets he received to only have one touchdown is just,
it's crazy.
Statistically improbable.
Yeah, right. So even if his targets come down, his touchdowns have to go up almost by definition. And I agree with you, Marv's targets can come up a little bit, but if he just catches a few more, and I've said this a lot in the non-point scoring season, they didn't use Marv right, I think, in this offense. And I think having this offseason to work with him, he's a, I'm going to run 10 yards over the middle, and then I can do basically anything after the catch with the ball. And I think they try too hard to make him like this, like Vincent Jackson, Mike Evans, like run down the sidelines and tap two toes in type of receiver. And he's athletic. He's just not that kind of guy. And hopefully the muscle he's put on is going to help him kind of push off corners and shake off corners a little bit and get some separation. And I think he'll be a much better player.
Yeah. I mean, they should play him like CeeDee Lamb.
Yes, exactly. He should be all over the field. He should be put in motion. He should be doing everything. So I think that's a good way of putting it. Okay. How much do you value established production versus potential? Is it really fair to put Malik Neighbors in the Jefferson Lamb tier? Rocky and I both have done that. Well, probably not that high, but seems like that values Neighbors near his potential production peak, which worries me near the top. Maybe take flyers on potential later instead. So I guess First off, what are your thoughts on Neighbors? And then we can get to the question itself.
Sure. So Neighbors, I love, and is he tied to a bad offense right now? Sure. But at least he gets plenty of volume. Yes. And I mean, he had a rough, we'll call it a rough QB last year, I think is easy to say. Multiple QBs. He dealt with an injury here or there, and he was just still putting up insane production. And I don't think they've really fixed that offense at all. I mean, name me another weapon.
Better. I'll say that. I think Russ is better.
That's a low bar to jump over.
Yes.
But there's no target competition there for him at all. So his targets could go. I mean, it wouldn't shock me if he has 200 targets this year if he stays healthy. Yeah. So for me, I don't have any negative value for him in any way. And to put him in the Jefferson Lamb tier, I think that's fair. I mean, I don't hate that. To me, we're talking about dynasty. So age does matter. Mm-hmm. And he is a few years younger than them. So I would expect Lamb and Jefferson to finish higher than him this year, maybe even next year too, but at some point I believe Neighbors will surpass them. So it really just depends on how you're building your team, or if you're in a startup league, where are you trying to take your team? So are you trying to build for maybe a season or two away? Then I think Neighbors is actually more valuable than CeeDee Lamb and Jefferson. Whereas if you're trying to win this season, I'd rather have CeeDee Lamb or Jefferson, but I think they're in the same tier. It's just a matter of how you want to build your team and where you want to, I guess, get Neighbors at his peak, whereas right now CeeDee Lamb and Justin are peaking as we speak.
Yeah. Speaking on the upside point, you know, Neighbors is a wide receiver, is actually 3 overall on just non-Superflex ADP, and he's ahead of Lamb, he's ahead of Bijan. I'm not quite there yet. I need to see it a little bit more, but I agree on, he's younger than Jefferson and Lamb, and you have to take that into account. He's 4 years younger than both of them. Lamb and Jefferson are both 26, and then Neighbors is 22. So, like I said, I think the quarterback got better. That's not a big bar to jump. I think there will be some growing pains for Dart when they eventually go to him, because they almost have to. Russ isn't going to win 10 games. They got to go to Dart at some point. and which actually stinks because, you know, I say that as a Bears fan and a partial Cowboys fan because my dad's grew up in Dallas and watched all the Cowboys and all that stuff. So I grew up watching that with him as well. But that defense is going to be pretty nasty, the Giants defense, and they have no offense to support it at all. They're going to win a lot of 10-3 games, which is going to be really unfortunate. When I think about upside, it's hard, right? Because I think people associate age with upside. I think people say because he's 22, he can be better down the line because he's going to get older. He's going to be in an offense more. And I agree with that part. I need to see production plus growth at the same time in order to put people in like Neighbors and BTJ's tier, which I think both of them showed us. So that's my kind of thought on the upside conversation. I think there has to be production you see at the start as well as kind of upside down the line. So,
yeah, for that, for me, as much as we hate to talk about correlation and predictions of what's going to happen next season, yep. So far the best indicator is past fantasy points scored.
I know.
So typically if you score more fantasy points, you have a better chance of scoring the same or better the next year. So for me, I prefer known quantities in Dynasty, but I also typically build my teams in ways that I'm trying to win now. And eventually you got to pay up and your team's going to age out. But that's how I prefer to play, is to build that way. So I like those known commodities more than potential. However, you can usually find more value, if you will, on the trade market with potential, because it's like that Family Guy meme of what's in the box. I mean, it could be a boat.
It could be a boat. Yeah, right.
And so that's why rookie picks can go for a crazy pick, or like a guy where you just think there's potential. I can sell you on that. He might reach it. He might not. Whereas I know right now this guy is already peaking. So it really comes down to how you like to build your dynasty rosters and how you like to play the game, and to each their own. But I like to know as best as I can who's already scoring points.
Yeah. By the way, I don't know if you're seeing what I'm seeing, but we're churning along in round 9 of SFB, and I'm really hoping you and I can do picks live on the podcast because they're moving. They're moving right now.
I'll take a look. I have not been looking. Let's see.
I had just have notifications on beeping. All right. What in the meantime, how much do you account for possibly massive drop-offs in future situations when valuing players? For example, Puka is awesome, but McVay and Stafford could retire at any point, thus significantly impacting his upside.
Yeah, honestly, I don't really give it too much slot unless it's like very, very obvious. Now, there is a good chance that Stafford's going to retire within the next year or two, but McVay's so young. I mean, I guess he's has plenty of money. He can retire whenever he wants, but he loves football so much. I don't see that happening. Right. And again, not that we wish injuries upon anybody, but any player can get injured at any time in one play for the whole season. It could be a minor injury. You just don't know. So I don't like to play fantasy thinking about that, of like all those what ifs. Again, if it's a very obvious one, then you might give it some thought. But again, you're looking now a year later, 2 years later. So it does depend on how you play. I like to think of Dynasty in a 2 to 3 year window. And even with that, you're still guessing so much of what you think could happen. We don't know if there's going to be any major free agent swings, any major injuries that then is a domino effect to affect other teams and who ends up on another team and trades here and there. So for me, I like to really kind of basically, I like to think of Dynasty as redraft with a little extra of thinking about age and situation, just a little bit more. But I wouldn't dock Puka. I mean, and he's technically kind of older for his position. Was he 25 now, I think?
I think he's 25,
But he's been great. I mean, he's set crazy records. Like, I'm not going to stress that. And he's such a fun player to root for, like we talked about earlier. So I'm not going to trade away Puka just because I'm concerned that he could lose something in the future.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think in the McVay-Stafford scenario, Puka, talent is talent, right? Lamb has done well in some bad Cowboys offenses. Neighbors did well in a very bad Giants offense. Talent is talent, and I think it'll, regardless of kind of what's around him, and I also trust the Rams to figure out a plan behind Stafford. So on the McVay stuff, there was that whole thing. He was going to retire after they won the Super Bowl and take over at Amazon in like that Herb Street seat. So maybe he does that one of these days, but I agree with you. He likes football. He likes what he's doing right now. I don't really see him really picking up and retiring, but I could see him having, you know, we keep all these teams keep hiring all the dang McVay tree. So I think McVay's got some decent backups for when he has to go. So I'm not worried about the Rams or Puka or anything like that yet. Okay. Because of simple variance, it's rare for players to repeat as the number one guy at their position. Is it crazy to therefore trade a guy like Jamar Chase at the peak if I can get a comparable talent like Jefferson or Lamb with a plus on top? What other guys would you tear down? Before you answer, I can't remember who did this on Twitter. Someone said, like, what if I traded? Yeah. Did you see this?
I think it was Jeff Bell.
I think it was too. Okay, so he said, what if I traded, like, Chase for Jefferson in a first and then traded Jefferson for Lamb in a first. And it was a very funny like thread he was building. And he like ended up with like, I don't even remember what it was, like Nico and like,
I think he traded two first. I think he ended up trading two first for Chase at the end.
Yeah. Right. And then
he still ended up with Chase at the end.
Yeah. Right. So, go ahead. What are your thoughts on trading out of a guy like Chase into a Jefferson or something like that? Would you do that or, what other top guys would you tier out of?
Sure. So it's for the first question, it's not crazy to do it. Because you're still getting comparable value, maybe even extra because of that plus, if you will. Because yes, Chase was amazing this past year, but he's still comparable to Jefferson, to Lamb. I mean, we even talked about neighbors. You can find comparable value between all those. So if you're getting an extra first round pick or an extra stud player on top of that, sure, why not? To me, it comes down to, do you want to trade the player away? Like, right. If you're a huge Chase fan, have fun, keep Chase.
Right.
If you're not a big Chase fan and like, I'm a CeeDee Lamb fan, okay, so I can get CeeDee Lamb and some? Yeah, I'm going to take CeeDee Lamb and then some and trade away Chase. Right. And I'll live with it. It really just depends. To me, and when you ask about like, which other players would you tear down from? Honestly, I would tear down from any player if I feel like it's comparable value.
Absolutely.
And I'm getting some extra if I was okay with trading that player away from just say, like I said, that fun, quote unquote, fun standpoint. If I'm a big fan of that player, well, no, you're going to have to really give me a lot more because I like having, I drafted them on my team or I got them another trade for a reason. I want them on my team. So you really have to sell me to give that player, not give them away, but to trade them away. But otherwise, no, I'm not married to any player in that sense of if I feel like I'm still making my team better, it's okay. And Jamar Chase could easily be the wide receiver one again this year,
yep.
And next year, and the year and after the year that. And he, yeah, could, right. Yeah. And he could easily be the wide receiver two or three or four this year, and it's still close enough that it's not that big a deal. Yep. I mean, when we're talking about wide receiver one and wide receiver two, each year is a little different. They could be within points of each other, or there could be 100 points between them. It just depends on how much of an outlier of a year. I mean, look at CMC a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Or Travis Kelce for so many years compared to other tight ends. And then eventually they come back to the pack or another guy has a great year. So you have two of them that have a great year. So to me, it's never a bad idea to tear down and get more value, but it's also not necessary.
Right.
It comes down to how do you like to play Dynasty? How do you like to build your team? And what are you comfortable with? But it's not crazy.
Right. I agree with basically everything you said. To hammer one thing home, I understand the show is called Trade Addicts, but don't trade just to trade. Like if the offer stinks for Chase, like don't trade Chase. It's too much fun to have Jamar Chase and watch him throw up 50 points for like the sixth time in his career. So I agree with basically everything else you said though. Okay, who's your favorite candidate to be the tight end who's not actually that good, but randomly finishes as a top 10 guy due to unexpected volume?
Darren sure. Wallace. So I was trying to give this some thought. It's tough.
Yeah.
But the one that I thought was fun that I came up with was Chiga Conquo. Now that he's got a new quarterback.
Yeah.
With Cam Ward, I feel like he's kind of been forgotten about. He's super athletic. He's never gotten the volume to do anything really in fantasy. But we've seen little flashes. So he was the first one that came to mind.
Yeah. I was struggling so hard to think about this. And like the joke answer is Darren Waller because of just the offense he's going into. But I know there's a rookie there and maybe he's the answer, but maybe we've thrown out Higby too fast because Higby continues to kind of be the guy who's going to throw a couple of touchdowns on decent volume on LA. And Hunter Henry is another guy who's going to be kicking around the Patriots. Gesicki is actually my answer now that I'm talking through it. Gesicki is now the tight end one, locked in, no doubt about it. And like I said, the Bengals offense is going to stink. They have to throw it around. So, my answer is Mike Gesicki because of Eric All's unfortunate injury. He's the tight end one, and he had a really good back end of the year last year. So I think he could continue that along the season. Okay. I was laughing at this because I realized you took McConkey and SFB. Has Ladd McConkey hit his ceiling already? And I responded to, I think it was Laquan Jones who said it, like, what if Ladd McConkey has hit his ceiling? And I did like the eyeballs emoji. So Dynasted wanted a response to this. So I'll let you go first, and then I'll say why I even considered that.
Sure. So I don't think he's hit his ceiling. Just simply Herbert threw for 504 passes last year, which is 13th in the league. And Ladd had, as a monster as he was, only had 112 targets, 22% target share. So to me, there's just plenty of room for him to still grow in that offense. I mean, yes, they added Trey Harris, Will Disley. I don't think he was there last year. I think they added him too.
Conklin.
That's who it was. Yeah. They had Will Disley last year, added Conklin. So Omarion Hampton, who can catch the ball out of the offense. To me, it's just they improved their offense, but that doesn't mean they're going to take away from McConkey. It's kind of like the whole McBride and Marvin Harrison Jones we talked about. Like, there's still room in that offense for them to both grow. They don't have to cannibalize each other. So it's the same way with Ladd. He only had 7 touchdowns, I guess I should say only, which is a good number, but it's not like some record-breaking number, not some eye-catching number. And again, it's only 112 targets. Again, that's not that much compared to your top-tier wide receiver. So if you believe that McConkey is talented and that he is going to continue to grow from his rookie year, then I don't see how it's possible that he already hit a ceiling.
I agree with that. And, you know, I was probably doing the eyeballs out of jokes a little bit because I just like to do stuff like that. But McConkey's probably not hit his ceiling yet. This is probably Zach Reed in my ear, but Trey Harris is going to be something. I think they added 2 good running backs who they can rely on. So maybe Herbert's passes come down, but I agree with you that there's still a lot there's upside there for sure. And I agree that McConkey is the number one. And, you know, jokes aside, I was staring at McConkey when I took Fields. It was between him and Fields when I was doing that. So I'm not, I was probably joking around a little bit when I said McConkey hit his ceiling, but I don't think it's going to be, I think he's going to be fine. And I like where he is in Dynasty right now. So, okay. So one more. The running back dead zone is much discussed. Recently, JJ Zacharyson had a pod on the tight end dead zone, but do we think there's a quarterback dead zone? Was discussing with a co-manager recently and realized you do not like almost anything from QB10 to QB20. Am I crazy? And this is just a short promo. Everyone check out Late Round Fantasy Football Podcast. JJ does great work. He's been on this show before. So everyone go check that out. But Zach, what do you think of the question?
So I don't think you're crazy that there's a QB dead zone, but I wouldn't call it a dead zone. Because to me, like, the running back dead zone or the tight end dead zone is when it's just a bunch of guys that aren't really going to score points for you and reach their expected ADP points that they should be getting at that draft. Whereas the QB 10 to 20, like you said, I feel like they're all very interchangeable. So to me, it's not really a dead zone. It's more of you shouldn't try to be the one to get the QB 10 in that group. You should be trying to get the one closer to QB 20 from a value standpoint, because the QB 20 could easily end up being the QB 10 this season. And most of those are your non-rushing QBs. All fall in that group. So
yeah,
I wouldn't call them dead because they could easily meet or exceed their ADP expected points, but I wouldn't want to waste or lose value on my draft pick by taking that first one, that QB 10, when I could just wait for QB 17 or 18 several rounds later.
Right. It's funny. I'm staring at 10 through 20 in DLF ADP, and I'll read them in a second. I think I might like them at value more than QB 1 through 10. So 10 through 20 is in order: Herbert, Nix, Stroud, Purdy, Goff, Mayfield, Love, who I don't like and Zach doesn't like, Lawrence, Prescott, Cam Ward, and JJ McCarthy. Like, I think I would take a lot of those guys plus picks over like the Burrows of the world, even though I love Joe Burrow, or Caleb, or Drake May is QB 8. Like, I think I'd rather have Stroud and a pick over May in Dynasty. Mm-hmm. So I don't think there's a dead zone. I think you have to be more of a get your guy in that range, right? Like, I like Dak over Love and Goff. I like Baker over Purdy. Like, you know, stuff like that. You have to kind of pick who you like and your guy in that range. Okay. So my question of the week, we always ask like a random question. I said, what's your favorite cocktail? And Vince said his favorite cocktail was a banana daiquiri. Of course, I'm sure that's in jest, but because I'm a terrible host, I forgot to say who you are and what you do and where they can find what you do. So we'll do that at the end. But one of the things you have worked on is a cocktail book. So that's why I put the question in there. So first off, tell us about the cocktail book and then give us your favorite cocktail or your favorite cocktail right now. I'm sure it changes.
Sure. I appreciate it. So yeah, I did the cocktail playbook. So 32 game-changing recipes. Basically, it's 32 recipes, one themed for each NFL team. And I did some research for each either city or team name or whatever applied the best for that team as to what would be a good cocktail to represent them, and not just the gimmicky, this team is this color, so here's this color cocktail. Now, some of them, the colors do go, and that's just, it works out well. But to me, it was more about what is popular in that city or that region of the country. And so it was a lot of fun to do. You get 32 cocktail recipes, so plenty to make. And I try to keep them as simple as possible with very common ingredients, because I see so many recipes out there, and they look amazing. And I'm like, what is that random liqueur you're talking about? I'm like, I don't want to drop $40 for some random liqueur because I need half an ounce for this one cocktail. So I tried to keep it simple, keep it common, while keeping it delicious. And I am not a big sweet cocktail drinker, so most of these do not have high sugar content, or you can adjust them to definitely keep the sugar down. But I definitely prefer the more well-balanced cocktails that are easy to drink and enjoyable, not the ones that are going to give you a headache because they're just full of sugar.
Very nice.
As for my favorite cocktail in the book itself, I would say it's the Houston drink. I will tell you there's mezcal in it, which is fun. A lot of people don't drink mezcal, which is kind of a smokier tequila, if you will, is the easiest, most simple way to describe it, but it's delicious. You can make a lot of drinks with it. But that's good. When it comes to just making a drink for myself, you can't go wrong with an old fashioned.
Yeah.
And there's just so many ways you can add a little variety to it, which is adding some different flavors or changing some different things. So I definitely, if I'm going to make a drink, typically it's going to be, if I'm just going to throw one together, it'll be an old fashioned, just because I can add some variety and it's easy to just sip on. But yeah.
So where can people find the book?
Yep. Super simple. Amazon.com.
Awesome.
And you can do, so this is the hardcover. This one's more designed to, like, if you're going to sit it out, like a coffee table book or like on your bar or something like that, you're going to display it in some way. I recommend the hardcover just because it looks nicer from a display standpoint. However, if you're just going to have it on a bookshelf or tucked away in a drawer somewhere, I take zero offense to that. Save the $5, get the paperback. You do not need the hardcover in that sense. It's the exact same book. It's just how you have it bound. So, yeah, but Amazon, just search The Cocktail Playbook. It'll pop right up. And they print it on demand, so it ships pretty quick depending on where you are. But it's also available internationally, which is cool. But yeah, Amazon takes care of everything. I don't actually, like, some people think I have like a stockpile of books. You're like, I don't.
That's what you're sitting on right now. It's a bunch of cocktail playbooks.
Yeah, no, I don't do any of the logistics. Amazon takes their chunk from me, which is totally fine for them to print it all and ship it out to everybody. But especially the paperback's definitely usually faster than the hardcover from a shipping standpoint. But I think paperbacks usually, if you have Prime, is usually 2 days. So they get out pretty quick.
Very nice. Are you doing the expo this year?
I am not. I've never been to the expo, and it's really hard for me to get to because I'm down in Florida, and that's always the same weekend week that school starts. So two of my kids are in school, so it's really hard for me to convince my wife to be like, hey, let me drop probably $1,000 to go up for a long weekend while you get all the kids ready for school. And then I'll be back. So I have not made it there. That's why I enjoy doing the live drafts with Scott Fishbowl, because it's like a mini expo, if you will, a regional expo, where you can still meet lots of people around fantasy football space without going all the way to Canton, Ohio.
Yeah. We're actually at the end of the show sheet, so why don't you go ahead and prop Orlando live this weekend, right? Where's it going to be? Yeah. You're going to be there. Once you throw out all the details, people can come join. Sure.
So Orlando Live, we are full of drafters. However, plenty of space for people to come hang out, have a good time still. Lots of raffles. I think I have 60 different raffle prizes. I then grouped them all together. So I think we have 39 raffles that you can put a raffle ticket in for. All that money goes to charity. We're supporting the Victim Service Center of Central Florida, as well as anything else that Fantasy Cares supports. And it's going to be Saturday, July 12th, 1 p.m. at Rock Pit Brewing, right near downtown Orlando. Great drinks there. They have a barbecue restaurant right next door that they have a special menu just for the brewery. So delicious food, and it's going to be a good time. So this is the fifth Orlando draft. I think we were one of the originals for Scotch Fish Bowl 11. So 11, 12, 13, 14. Yeah, fifth one. So it's a good group. We've grown it now to five divisions this year. If I had more space, we could have found even bigger. But still 60 people drafting. There'll probably be close to 100 people there, just between people coming to hang out and bringing friends and all that stuff. So plenty of space for people to come hang out and lots of prizes to win.
Yep. Everyone go check it out. If you're in the Orlando, or I've heard like Tampa people are driving over. So I know Zach Reed will be there.
I would say almost half the division is Tampa. Maybe not half, but maybe a third of the division is from Tampa. Yeah, Zach Reed's coming down. Bob Gilchrist is coming down. Ryan McDowell was hoping to pop over. He's probably not going to make it. He's down right now here on a family vacation, but nice. I don't think the timing's going to work out with him coming over. But yeah, this will be plenty of great people to hang out with and meet.
Yeah. All right. That's awesome. I'll give you the choice. Do you want to make your Scott Fishbowl pick live on air, or do you want to think about it?
Am I up?
You are up. Do you want to talk through it and make it live on air, or do you want to sit and think about it? I will let you decide. We can end the show.
We can talk. If you're okay with us taking a couple minutes to talk through
it,
we can
talk through it. Let's talk through it.
All right. So I have some people queued up. Yep. So I'm in the ninth round. So this is going to be a starter. So I'm looking at still, for me, it's still pretty early on. There's plenty of guys I like out there. So some people that are sticking out to me as I'm looking through the list is like Shakir with Buffalo, Downs with Indianapolis, because these guys are all falling because of their offenses QBs. Shahid is interesting, even though I really hate the Saints QB situation. Kincaid also with Buffalo, if he stays healthy with that tight end premium, is interesting to me. Let me see. Let me go to...
You haven't said my guy who I'm queued up on yet, so I'm happy. Oh,
that's good. You should probably tell me. I'm just going to be honest with you. But man, would that be funny.
Yeah.
Let's see. So I guess without you telling me who your guy is, what are some things in this round are you like types of players you're looking for?
Upside at this point. I think there will still be some stability later. So I'm still taking moonshots right now. And I think about this way in redraft a lot too, is you can get your, you know, stable QB like Stafford super late, or so I'm taking moonshots right now still.
No, that makes sense. Let's see. So I got some different places to kind of look at projections and stuff to kind of see who should.
Yeah, while he's looking, go. Fantasy Life put out a cool tool.
Yep.
That's Matthew Berry came on the Podathon to close it out to promote that. Who else is doing SFB projections? I know he's coming.
Quite a few people like put out their own like projections. Yeah.
Yeah. But go check out the Fantasy Life app. Matthew Berry's done a lot for SFB, and everyone should go support it. He's got a really good team.
All right. So looking at these projections, a lot of the guys I've definitely wanted have gone off, which is okay. That happens. As they should. We're in a good draft, but I'm really thinking Shakir might be the guy. Just making sure I'm not missing anybody. I like how many targets he's been in that, and I wish that offense would get a little more pass heavy, but we'll who knows? Let's see if there's any running backs that stick out. Because a lot of wide receivers have gone off in this round. A lot of the wide receivers I was definitely looking at, I was like, oh, this would be cool, and then gone. Let's see, running backs. See, like, Tracy's high up there on, like, expected points, but I just do not want that offense.
No, not at all.
Najee Harris is up there, but, you know who's catching my eye? Jordan Mason. I feel like it's kind of sneaky if Jones, who gets hurt a lot, gets hurt again. But then does he fall back to me? Or is that the guy you were thinking of since you're just like got real quiet? Ooh. All right.
I'll never tell.
It's okay. All right. I think I'm going to go. I should go with Shakir, but I think I'm going to go with Kincaid, take the risk that he finally puts it together and is healthy because of that extra bonus point per catch. So the pick is in.
There we have it, folks. It was Mason. So if CT doesn't take my person in the meantime, but we'll close the show. If CT goes in between this, we'll go with it. Russ and Rocky, please don't fire me. I know I missed the intro. So I was so excited to talk about SFB. I forgot to ask who you are, what you do, and where they can find what you do. So why don't you tell everyone now where they can find what you're doing, the Twitter follows, the, you know, all the socials.
Sure. So I'm a FF Chalupa Batman pretty much on any social media site you want to be on. When it comes to my work, I really don't put out content anymore. I'm the director of content for Fantasy and Frame. So you can go ahead and follow Fantasy Frames and support that team. A lot of great people on that team. We keep getting it bigger and bigger and bigger, and they're just putting out a ton of great content. But yeah, I mostly just do stuff more behind the scenes and do some graphic work. You talked about the Avi Makers doing all that. So that's more me now in the industry, is helping out behind the scenes and helping with Fantasy Cares where I can.
Yep. I know the Avi Makers are done for this year, but what you guys do is truly spectacular and amazing, and I will never even begin to fathom how you guys do it. So
it's easier than you think.
I know, but kudos on all that stuff. It looks fantastic this year. Everyone, if you didn't get an Avi this year, get it next year. These guys are awesome. It was my first year doing it, and it might never change. So our stuff, patreon.com/TradeOxPod. You can watch us while we record. You can see Zach's beautiful book he was holding up before. again, you can find that on Amazon. You can, we also have our Discord chat, the Cool Kids Club. It's been brimming with SFB talk right now because a lot of guys are in there. So we are all talking about our drafts, and obviously it's, we're getting into training camp season soon. So I'm about to blow up the Discord with news like I used to. So get ready, Discord. It's coming. And trying to think what else. Oh, we have Fantasy Cares. Merch is amazing. We're done with race days. We still have the end of summer giveaway coming. I think that's in at the end of August. I probably should write the date down in the sheet one of these days because I keep forgetting to do that. But there's like a ridiculous amount of prizes. So everyone go donate to be a part of that. And good luck on your SFB drafts, folks. As Rush Fisher always told us, if you have a trading problem, you're never alone. Good night, everyone.
Thank you for listening to the Trade Addict Podcast, a member of the DLF family of podcasts and a proud member in the Dynasty Addict Podcast Network. Please follow your hosts at Dynasty Haha and at Dynasty FS Addict. Please subscribe, rate, and review. We will catch you next time on the Trade Addict Podcast. Poopy pants. Daddy's the best. See ya.